This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number two. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in just a couple of minutes. And Bobby Belt is going to join us to talk Dallas Cowboys. And I say this every time Bobby comes on the show. I can't think of anybody that is more in tune with what they cover than Bobby Bell. There are a lot of people equal, and you know, but I don't find very many people above what he knows and what he delivers every time we have him on to talk about the Dallas Cowboys. And they got a big game coming up Thursday night against the Saints at the Superdome. No, we're not talking must win. We're not getting crazy like that. I mean, it's still a lot of games. And they play in a division that they still lead by at least, you know, I think two games over Washington. But we are talking about a team that is trying to stay, you know, keep pace with the Arizonas of the world and the Green Bays of the world to try to continue to try to push their way into some sort of the home court field advantage in the postseason. And it's slipping away. They've lost three of their last four. Now, the Saints, they've lost four in a row. They may make a change of quarterback, may not. We'll see. But Dallas will not have Mike McCarthy on the sidelines as the head coach tested positive for COVID-19. And Dan Quinn, formerly the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, defensive coordinator for the Cowboys, going to take over on an interim basis. Last night, and when you have a college football rivalry and you lose to that rivalry, especially one as deep and rich in tradition as Michigan, Ohio State, nothing erases the pain. But Ohio State tried to give their fans something to be happy about. Last night, they upended the top-ranked Duke Blue Devils in Columbus, winning that game by shutting Duke down over the final 4.5 minutes. They were down 15 points. They rally in the second half. They win 71-66, and they take down the number one team in the country. Fans storm the court afterwards, and yes, it does not take the pain away from losing to Michigan and being out of this college football playoff thing. But the one thing that college basketball can do for you, again, regular season games don't carry the same weight, obviously, as football games, but at least you have it, right? Right? Duke could go on to win the national championship in the tournament, but Ohio State has this one moment where they beat Duke. And for Mike Krzyzewski, these road losses resulting in fans going absolutely crazy, something he has seen time and time again in all his time in Durham for this Duke Blue Devils team. And it continued last night when fans stormed the court. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Here we are on a Wednesday. You know, hey, it could be any time. But it's the good, the bad, and the dumb in the midweek version. What is the good of the day? Is
where you're going. I might be alone here, but I do enjoy these.
Yeah.
The live in front of a studio audience.
I do too.
All right.
Did I miss one?
No.
Okay, good.
That's why I'm telling you, because they are doing another one that'll air next Tuesday.
Okay.
And they are doing, you ready for it?
Yeah.
Facts of Life.
All right.
And Different Strokes.
Facts of Life. Who plays Blair?
Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. Let's see, Gabrielle Union will play Tootie.
Awesome. Is she going to be on roller skates?
I hope so. If she's not, they're doing it a disservice, right?
That's very true.
Allison Tolman, I'm not sure who that is. She will play Natalie. And Catherine.
I feel like I should know who that is, but I don't.
Yeah, and Catherine Hahn will play Joe.
Really?
Yeah.
So we got a kind of an older version of Facts of Life here?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Unless they dress them up a little bit and make them look younger. I don't know.
You're good at this kind of thing. What was the premise of Facts of Life again? They were in an orphanage?
Oh,
was it a school for girls?
I think it was a boarding school.
Was it a boarding school?
You just never really saw the classrooms.
Right.
And I don't
Mrs.
know.
Mrs. Garrett was like their teacher?
It was like a dorm room, they were at a boarding school, but this was where they lived.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Like
I think it was a boarding school.
In loose terms, like the only way I can describe it, I think it was like a sorority house, but it wasn't really a sorority. Because all these girls went to an all-girls school, but this is the house that they lived in.
Look at me. And, look at me going orphanage.
Yeah. And Mrs. Garrett, Blair wasn't an orphan. Come on, she was rich.
And Joe's dad was part of the cast at one point. Oh, goodness gracious.
And Joe is, So, I'm curious. I'm the only thing I'm a little skeptical on is the casting.
Seems a little old.
Because on the Different Strokes side, although
Different Strokes are doing that?
Yeah.
Awesome.
John Lithgow is playing Mr. Drummond. Now, I can get on board with that.
I can
that.
Get on that. Conrad Bain was the original Mr. Drummond.
But playing Arnold and Willis, I do have issues with.
All right.
Because Willis will be played, I believe, by Damon Wayans.
Gotcha.
And Arnold is being played by Kevin Hart.
What? Kevin Hart?
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be great.
So, but I mean, if you want to look at the positive, Norman Lear was saying, other than with my family, there's no place I'd rather be in my 100th year than on a soundstage at Sony with these glorious actors reliving what our company had produced all
right, so
those
Norman,
years ago.
Norman Lear was responsible for these two shows, too?
Yeah.
Because remember a couple of years ago, they did All in the Family and the Jeffersons.
Which was Norman Lear.
That was Norman Lear. That was big time.
And then they did
Norman
Lear. Good Times and I can't remember the other one they did, which was also Norman Lear.
I met Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Did you really?
I did. He was living in Las Vegas. I was working for CBS Radio at the time, and he was auditioning to be the new afternoon host at the News Talk station. I was the operations manager of the sports station, and he was auditioning, and I got picked to be on the panel to judge the people. Like, I don't know why I was there. I was a sports guy, but they asked me, like, hey, would you like to sit in on the committee that's going to listen to these shows and kind of give you feedback? And I said, sure. And because I got to be on that committee, I got to meet the people that came in, and I got to meet Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Nice.
He was very nice. He was a very nice man. I didn't ask him to say dynamite or anything like that.
Although he probably would have willingly done it.
If he had known I was one of the judges, maybe he would have done it for me.
Maybe.
But he was a very nice man. He lived in Las Vegas. Yeah. He was competing for this job.
The one positive, Mrs. Garrett will be in both.
Oh!
Both episodes.
Oh, that's right, because she was the housekeeper.
I think Facts of Life, correct me if I'm wrong, Facts of Life was a spinoff
Strokes. Exactly.
Now, no idea.
Just like the Jeffersons was a spinoff of All in the Family.
Yeah. Now, no idea who is playing, I can't remember the sister's name.
Oh.
In Different Strokes.
Oh, Dana Plato's character? Kimberly?
Kimberly?
Kimberly Drummond?
Yeah, I don't know who's playing that.
Yeah, all right.
But that's the only thing. I wish they went and got child actors.
I know.
You know,
is it going to be, interesting to see adults playing younger people?
I don't know.
Just because it's live and it's going to be interesting?
Maybe.
I don't know. It's kind of a cool thing.
I don't know. It should be fun. Next Tuesday.
Yeah, the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. Yeah.
There you go.
That was a good show. All right, what's the bad
Do you think
the day?
They could make that show today?
No. Not at all. Are you kidding me? Mr. Drummond drove in a limousine to pick up the two boys.
Yeah, on the street.
On the street. He's
and
like,
it wasn't
hi
like,
to.
And it wasn't yeah, like no. they didn't have a mom. That Because the mom was there every once in a while. I was like, hey, Ma, I just want to give these guys a better life. You mind if they come live with me?
You mind if they come live with me? I'm very successful and rich.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not at all. Oh, the 80s.
get away with things back then.
Exactly. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that there were some patrons at a 17th century hotel in England who were stuck there for 3 days due to heavy snowfall.
So they were in a 17th century...
Yeah, they all went there. There was a big show. There was an Oasis cover band playing, and they all went to the show. Some had planned on staying the night.
Okay.
Because it's a hotel, and there was a pub downstairs.
So the hotel
downstairs.
Has existed since the 1700s.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
But a storm came through. Storm Arwen came through, dumped record amounts of snowfall that made it unsafe for these people to leave, and they were literally trapped there for 3 days. So although some were saying, by the third day, people, I think, were just kind of wanting to stay. But they had to do makeshift. They didn't have enough beds for everyone, so people just slept on the floor in the bar.
On the hard stone?
Yes.
Do they bake biscuits in the morning and get the meat on the spick?
I hope so.
Yeah. Do they have a jug of ale available?
Plenty. It's plenty. An English pub. I bet they had storage.
That's the one thing. I got to be honest with you. That's the one thing in this country we don't have. We don't go back to like the 1500s. Like, we don't have a history that goes back to like the Middle Ages. I mean, we do, but it's not, no, but I remember, not I went our to, country.
I remember being in Boston several years ago, and I went to, I can't remember, it was the Bell in Hand Tavern. That's what it was called. And it's considered to be America's oldest bar. It's been there like since the 1770s.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can think of as I was sipping my Bell in Hand Tavern ale was that, man, maybe this is where, you know, Sam Adams thought, I should become a brewer.
Yeah, right. Like, if you go to Harvard, there's buildings that have been around since like the 1600s.
But, I mean, that part is like kind of
England.
Fun.
No. Like in England, they're like, this goes back to 930 AD. And you're like, what? Wow.
Is that even possible?
Right, exactly.
So, like this bar and restaurant have been around since the 17th century. That's the 1600s.
That's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great.
And it's considered the highest pub in all of England.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, yeah, I'm getting stuck there. So, was it Oasis cover band, you said?
It was an Oasis cover band. Did they just play constantly? God, yeah. I mean, that alone would be horrible.
That would be horrible.
You know, I could take Oasis in sittings.
And doses.
And doses, and yeah, that'd be it.
Wow. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, is Game of Thrones news. There's a
Game
news
of
story.
Thrones news, yeah, okay.
All right, I don't know why we need to keep going back to this, but the news story is that George R.R. Martin was concerned with how this series was going. Like, that's breaking, because he's been saying that all along.
Right.
That during season 5, he begged the CEOs of HBO to make it go 10 seasons.
Yeah.
Why do we keep doing this?
But he didn't finish the books.
He didn't finish the books.
Like all of you Game of Thrones fans out there who like his writings, who like his books, you all have to admit something about the guy. He's lazy. All right? He's lazy.
He was counting money.
How long is it taking him to write the next chapter of this book? So for those who don't know this series on HBO, I'll give you the rundown real quick. So it was cruising along nicely. Okay, there was book material. The writers had book material to go by. Oh, it was all these plots, and it was about politics, and the good guys didn't always win. It was just crazy.
And you didn't know which way it was going.
You didn't know which way it was going, and you didn't know who was going to be killed. It was every actor that was on the show was like, we don't even know if you're going to have a job next year. We don't know where these stories are going.
They killed off the main star of the whole show in the first season.
First season, right? So, but it was going along great, and the dialogue was really good, and it was great. And then the writers are like, hey, man, can you hurry up with those books? Because we're running out of time. And he was like, no. And they're like, okay, here's what's going to happen here. If you don't give us the book, we're going to have to write it ourselves, and we kind of suck at it. And they went, sorry, no. And they went, all right, we're apologizing now, but we're not going to apologize in the future where this thing is going. So the two guys, the two writers, they wrote garbage. I mean, garbage. And the dialogue plummeted, the plot plummeted. Things didn't make any sense. There wasn't any continuity. Characters were completely different than they were before. Characters that used to be smart were dumb, making stupid decisions. Plot threads coming out of nowhere. It was awful. And you know who? But don't take my word for it. Every actor on the set said that.
I think you can quote one of the dragons as well.
Right, right. Peter Dinklage was like, he had the smartest character on the show.
One of the most brilliant characters created.
And then there was one thing that he did. He goes, and he takes them to the crypt, which doesn't seem like a smart thing to do. Like, he's literally begging the writers to return his character to some sort of glory. And they go, no, 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 you're dumb. And that's how that's where the show went. It was a complete mess. I remember I watched that thing going, this sucks. This is awful. And I'm like, but you know what? I'm all in on this. I'm going to go to the end. It was so disappointing.
Yeah.
So disappointing. It's, you know how bad it is? I'll tell you how bad it is. HBO has got some series that in the past that I really like. Sopranos, of course, The Wire.
Yep.
I love Boardwalk Empire. I love it. And whenever I'm just bored, I will throw on episodes of these things and watch them. I'll watch whole seasons again. I won't touch Game of Thrones with a 10-foot pole.
No.
I won't touch it because I know what the payoff is. The payoff was so crappy. I'm like, flush it down the toilet.
I mean, but this is what I'm talking about, though. Can we just keep it in the past? Like, we're done with it?
Yeah.
I hate the fact that, like, you know, it's almost as if George R. R. Martin's trying to keep his name in the books.
Exactly. Because it's over. He's gone. He's yesterday's
he's done.
News.
Yeah, we're done with him. I mean,
you had your chance to buy.
You didn't finish writing. We're done.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even care if you do finish writing now, because what are you going to do? You finished the last book or the last two books, whatever, however many books you want to write.
Yeah.
Does that mean they're going to go back and go, let's do season 7 and 8 over again? Action.
Fame is addicting, man. And you better, if you got it, you want to keep it. But you better be careful while you have it, because you screw it up, that it doesn't come back to you.
Yep. Write a new series, George R. R. Martin.
That's right.
A futuristic one now.
Try to sucker us into that cave.
But it's just, again, I mean, you know, people will clamor onto it. It's like, oh, imagine if it went 10 seasons. They probably could have fixed. No. You're just, all you're doing, George, is asking, like, hey, if you went 10 seasons, I would have given me more time.
That's right.
And you didn't do it, so it's not my fault.
Finish the stupid book. Just do
don't.
It.
Don't finish
or
the book.
Or don't. We don't care now.
Yeah.
We used to. Now we don't.
Because, you know, like, here's the thing. I don't want to know a proper ending.
I don't. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I don't want to know.
You had my attention, and now it's gone.
Yeah. I don't need to know anymore. I mean, you know. The show is what it is.
Exactly.
And Bram is king of all of Westwood or whatever.
Bram the Broken. Oh, those writers. It's like they either did it on purpose or they really were terrible writers. It's one or the other, but it's not both. They were either terrible writers or they went, you know what, screw it. We're writing this in crayon and we don't care.
You hit the nail on the head. Some of the story arcs of it were just god awful.
Terrible. Terrible. There was one where they explained it by going, she forgot about the fleet of boats. And I'm like, how do you forget a fleet of boats?
You know, slipped my mind.
Yeah. God,
don't get mad at me. Yeah, you know, last week I forgot where I put my shoes.
Yeah.
This week it's a fleet of boats. It happens.
All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. We got Bobby Belt coming up. We'll talk Cowboys as we continue along. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. Have a car problem but don't know where to go? Maybe you're on the road when your car breaks down. Let O'Reilly Auto Parts help with O'Reilly Auto Parts shop referral program. Take the guesswork out of finding a great shop wherever you are. Can call an O'Reilly location near you or visit O'ReillyAuto.com and click find a repair shop to find a reputable repair facility or service center for your repairs. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Oh, goodness. You know that TV, that live in front of a studio audience thing that you were talking about? I really am curious. Are the ratings for those good? Because we love nostalgia in this country, don't we?
Let's see. The last version of it, which was in, I saw it here just a few minutes ago. I wanted to bring the most recent December 2019 episode, which was Good Times. And I think they did the Jeffersons again, maybe?
Uh-huh.
I don't remember which one, but it reached nearly 13 million viewers.
That's amazing. In this day and age,
That's
fantastic. Michael, after the live Different Strokes show, does Kevin Hart's parents blow all his money and does Damon Wayans go to prison? Oh, yes, Michael, yes. The Different Strokes curse of all of those actors. I know Gary Coleman passed away, Dana Plato did too. Is Todd Bridges still alive?
I think he is still alive.
Oh, he's still alive, okay.
He's still alive.
All right. Poor Gary Coleman, man. There wasn't a bigger star on TV back in the 70s and 80s than Gary Coleman.
No, you got that right.
Remember how big he was? You know what? That is one of the reasons the show Webster was Webster. It was when Alex Karras and his wife created that show, they were going to be the center of the show, right? So they were Alex Karras, the former nose tackle for the Detroit Lions. Him and his wife created a production team, television production team. And so they created this sitcom about a couple, And they, it was basically going to be about them. And then they hired Emmanuel Lewis to play their adopted son. And Emmanuel Lewis was cute. And the show, the network said, you know, we would really like the show to center around him. And they were like, well, no, the show centers around the parents. And they're like, if you want it to be on TV, it centers around him. In fact, we're even going to name the show after the kid. And that's how the Webster came around, because it was a response to Gary Coleman's popularity back in the day. So, yeah, I mean, he was a big, big star. And then do you find it sad when a guy of that stature then is doing reality shows and bouncing around?
With all of those, yeah.
You're like, it's just sad because you're thinking there's nothing
running for
bigger.
Governor.
Yeah, right? Like doing these things afterwards where they just don't get – they can't stay in the public eye long enough.
Well, it's a lot of those 80 stars.
Yeah, right.
I mean, some of them, you know, were able to make it out. I mean, you know, you think of like for every, you know, Kevin Arnold, there was a Bruce Willis.
Right, sure.
You know, that was, or for every Gary Coleman, I should say, there was a Bruce Willis that made it out of being a television star, becoming an actual star.
Yeah, like a George Clooney.
Yeah. You know, George Clooney. I mean, perfect example, because we all know he got his start on Facts of Life.
Facts of Life.
And
yeah.
No one else out of that show did anything ever again.
Wouldn't that be great if he just showed up unannounced?
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, and this is what I never understand about these actors. Why don't they do that? Like, why wouldn't, like, if I was
George Clooney,
and I knew this was going down, I'd have my agent call and go, hey, George would love to just be on there for 2 seconds as, what was he, Joe's boyfriend or something like that on the show?
Yeah,
I forget what he was, but he was on the show.
Yeah.
He's like, he would just, can you write a few lines for him? It doesn't have to be a lot, but he'll just show up unannounced. It'll be a surprise. He'll pop in and bam.
Just like, real quick.
Quick. I would do it. I would, if I was a big star like that, I would do it without question. Without question, I would love to revisit my. Here's the thing with athletes in sports, you know, stars. We watch them and we know we're only going to watch them for a period of time, right? We know we're only going to watch them for a certain amount of time, and then that's it. Then they go on to do broadcasting, or maybe they don't do anything at all, or maybe they get into coaching, whatever it is. But we know their window is a certain length. With actors, we don't know when the window ends, right? A child star could become a 75-year-old Oscar winner. You can be put into different roles based on your age and appearance and whatnot forever. And a lot of them hang around, but few really, like child stars, really make it. It's one of the reasons I love Jason Bateman. I watch everything that he's
story.
In.
Like his rise and fall and rise.
Rise, fall, rise. But here he is. I can't wait for Ozark season 4 to come out.
Yeah, because, I mean, literally, we're talking about a guy who just, I mean, completely disappeared.
Completely disappeared.
And the Batemans, I mean, if you, you know, extended to his sister Justine, they were like, oh, it almost felt like they were like the first couple of Hollywood for a little bit.
Right, exactly.
Out of the teenage stars.
Yeah, and he was on Silver Spoons as Ricky Schroeder's friend. He had his own show called All the Right Moves for like 10 seconds. But then he appeared in a few things. And you're right. He disappeared, came back a little bit. He was on Hogan's Family and, I don't know, Valerie and then Hogan's Family.
Until
Valerie Harper left. So he had that role. Then you're right. He disappeared. Then Arrested Development, a bunch of other things, movies. And now Ozark. And
everything. I mean, there was for a while there. He was in every single movie that came out, I think, one year.
I feel like, I was like, this guy, I've been watching this guy on some screen pretty much my whole life.
All right, so I had to look it up because you brought up George Clooney.
Yes.
And I was like, God, I remember there being a reoccurring star for Different Strokes. Couldn't put my finger on it. And, you know, if you bring George Clooney back just for a one-liner in Facts of Life, you have got to bring Janet Jackson back for one line of Different Strokes.
Yes. She was Willis's girlfriend.
Yeah.
That's right.
Holy just bring her back just for one line. That's
Michael
it.
Michael in Atlanta, he said George Clooney was the repairman in the house and the girls had the crush
there
on
him. There you go. Okay.
So it wasn't Joe's boyfriend. I have the girls living in an orphanage dating George Clooney when neither one of those things was
true.
Well,
you went from orphanage to brothel.
That's right. I really don't know my facts of life history, apparently. All right, Bobby Belt's joining us next. We'll talk Cowboys.
listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, to the Progressive guest line we go. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Bobby Belt joins us, NFL Network Cowboy Insider. Dallas playing New Orleans coming up on Thursday night. They've lost three of their last four. The Saints on the other side, they've lost four in a row. We'll get an insight onto the Cowboys. We'll also be missing their head coach. How are you, Bobby?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Always good talking to you. Sometimes when this, especially in the last couple of years with coaches not being around for COVID or for whatever reason, sometimes it's a big deal, sometimes it's a little deal. What does it mean for the Cowboys that he is not going to be on the sidelines?
I think it's a smaller deal than with other teams just because Mike McCarthy, you know, he doesn't call the offense. There's kind of been this running joke in Dallas that, you know, nobody's quite sure what he does. just because you don't see much of it. He's not calling the plays. It doesn't seem like he's the one, you know, putting together the game plan. You know, when things went so horribly wrong last year, he didn't look like you could give him much blame for that last year. Didn't look like you could give him much credit for what this year. So I don't know how much he does other than some of the game management decisions and some of the fourth down calls, which have at times been a problem for them this year. So I actually think it may be a slight improvement with Dan Quinn. Who knows? We'll see.
Are there any COVID outbreak sort of people who are not playing that will affect the game? Terrence Steele isn't going to play. Some assistant coaches. Is there anything that does stand out?
I mean, they're ravaged on their coaching staff right now. I mean, it's none of the coordinators. It's not like the big position coaches, but I mean, they are having like, you know, offensive assistants and strength coaches and stuff like that have gotten it. And then, of course, there's been McCarthy. On the player side, I mean, they're still waiting for Cooper to come off the COVID list. He's apparently still dealing with some post-COVID symptoms, so they're not entirely sure if he's going to play yet. That'd be a big deal for them. They are going to get CeeDee Lamb back this week from his concussion, though, so that's a positive. They have their Pro Bowl caliber right tackle, Lyle Collins, that they had kind of benched in favor of Steele. And so, not because of, you know, initially it was because of a suspension, and they just thought Steele had played well enough to keep the job. So it wasn't a classic benching, like with problematic play. But, I mean, they do have that benefit that if Steele's not going to be able to go, they have a guy like Lyle Collins, who they paid a lot of money to in recent years to be their right tackle.
What's the status of Ezekiel Elliott? What's it been this week? I know he's dealing with an ankle injury, but there was a talk that he may not play Thursday given the short week. Is that a reality?
He's had a really tough time with a knee injury the last few weeks. And he's not been the same player. He's gone, I think, six straight games without 60 yards rushing, which is the longest streak of his career. And so he's just not been the same productive player. I think if you need an example of how bad he feels, he scored a touchdown on Thanksgiving and didn't even think about jumping in the kettle. I mean, that's kind of where he's at physically. I think internally there's some people who'd like him to sit and rest and get the knee better, but I mean, that's not Zeke. Zeke had said that he's a tough guy and he's going to power through it, but there is kind of this, you know, law of diminishing returns here of, you know, how much is this worth it? You know, you need to sit at some point because, you know, at this point there's a question of how effective are you, how much are you helping this team?
How important is the running game? I mean, they're in the top 10 in both categories, but how important has the run game been and the lack of the run game in the last couple of games?
Yeah, there's this ongoing debate, obviously, in the new analytical era about how important the run game is, period.
Yeah.
And that, you know, a lot of people feel like the run game is just, you know, is meant to kind of add to the passing game, but the passing game should be your main focus. And I think that's how the Cowboys generally view things. But if you have absolutely no run game, then, I mean, they can do things to kind of press you in the passing game. If you can't make them pay for loading up against your pass, well, then that's a problem. That's something the Cowboys have dealt with recently. Their run blocking hasn't been great. Ezekiel Elliott's been banged up. When they do things like break a 31-yard run on Thanksgiving with Tony Pollard, it gets called back because of holding. So, you know, I think they're a team that wants to pass the ball, and that's how they mainly want to move the ball downfield, but it's been difficult for them when their run game's been so inept in recent weeks that, you know, teams are able to cheat a little bit against them.
Yeah, in each loss of the three of the four, each loss has its own kind of story and reason, but is that the main consistent reason is the lack of the running game?
I think the main consistent reason is they've been getting out physical. Teams are punching them in the mouth, and they don't know how to respond to it. You know, they've got a finesse offense, they've got finesse receivers, and I think these receivers are having a tough time beating press coverage. And, you know, with these run blitzes and some of the other things, the offensive line's been losing sort of the physicality in the trench game. And so I think that's been the headline to me over these games. And you saw them finally respond a little bit. You know, let's take some shots downfield in the second half against the Raiders. And they were able to move the ball, but it was a little, you know, too little too late. And so hopefully they've adjusted to that and they can put the AFC West behind them now since they've lost three out of four to that division. And so I think that that's been the main takeaway to me is that this team has sort of disturbingly not been able to respond to physicality from opposing teams.
How important is this game? We still got six left, but it is December. Maybe Washington's creeping up a touch, but in terms of this game, again, not a must win, but what level of importance is Thursday?
And it's funny, if you look at like the history of the Cowboys and the Saints in recent years, it's been a pretty important game each time. 2019, they were 3-0 riding into the Superdome, and they lost, and that kind of started their season on a downward spiral. 2018, it sort of solidified the narrative that the Cowboys were contenders when they beat the AT&T Stadium. You know, that, okay, you've got Cooper, you just beat a really good team, the defense looks legit. 2013, they had the historic Saints set the record for most first downs, got Rob Ryan fired. 2014, it was the victory at AT&T Stadium that set them off as, oh, okay, they are contenders, and everybody forgot about the opening loss to the 49ers. So this has always been kind of a narrative-setting game for them. And I think whether they win or lose, that's going to be the case this week. I think this has a strong chance to kind of direct their season because that's going to be really tough to sit on a fourth loss in five games, sit on that loss for 10 days before you go into a road game against Washington, who's kind of surging a little bit. And so I think it is critical that they get a win. And I think whichever direction it goes, it can really kind of push their season a certain direction.
Bobby Belt joins us again, NFL Network, Cowboys insider. Give us your thoughts on Micah Parsons, because, again, he has just been really playing great.
Yeah, I mean, Micah Parsons is, you know, the Joker card in the deck. He can be whatever they need him to be. You know, he can play in coverage, he can play the run, he can pass rush, he can do it all. I mean, I think that, you know, by the Washington game, they should have Randy Gregory back, have DeMarcus Lawrence back this week. And so when they can get those guys all three on the field together, that's where I think they're really excited about how this defense can look, because Parsons has been such a special player, such a difference maker. And I think, you know, some of the Trayvon Diggs interceptions that have dried up in recent weeks, you may see some of those return once these three guys are pass rushing together. But, I mean, yeah, Parsons is a physical freak and is proving early on to be such an emotional catalyst for that defense as a young player, which is really rare. That I think that there's just, you have a tough time under or you have a tough time overestimating just how important he is to this team right now.
Your thoughts on Washington? We saw them Monday night, and there's been a percolating interest in how they're playing because they've won three in a row. Do you find Washington a threat? How do you see them?
I wouldn't on paper find them to be a threat to Dallas because I think Dallas is just a much more talented team. But with Dallas kind of spiraling and them gaining some momentum, that would be concerning to me. I mean, I don't think you want to catch a hot team that's kind of feeling themselves a little bit and then you're having questions about how well you can respond to physicality, especially if they throwback Ron Rivera type of mindset, which is about physicality and punishing opponents. And so that would be the concern for me is just we've seen how much they struggle with physical opponents, and Washington wants to play physical football, and Washington's kind of getting that momentum and feeling good about themselves. And so that's the biggest concern to me. I think there's a talent deficit there. I think Dallas is clearly more talented than Washington, but the issues of physicality that Dallas has shown, they kind of start spiraling a little bit and getting down on themselves, and then you got to walk into that road environment here in a couple weeks, then, yeah, I think Washington can pose a real threat to them.
Bobby, always good talking to you, my friend, and I really appreciate it. We'll definitely catch up with you as we get closer to the end of the season.
Absolutely appreciate you.
You got it. Bobby Belt, again, NFL insider, and really knows this team really well. Just looking at where Dallas is right now, 7-4, and we bring up Washington because, again, I was a little, I don't know. I know announcers want to hype up what they're calling. I've done it myself many, many times. But, boy, there was a little love there for Washington on that Monday night crew. They really like the way this team is playing. You still look at Dallas, though, right? We all kind of look at Dallas as a team that when they fix things, they should win this division and win it going away. It's more going to be Dallas losing it than anybody coming up and getting them. But here's the thing. Dallas is playing the Saints on Thursday night on the road, then Washington on the road, the Giants on the road, and then home against Washington. Now, look, divisional games are tough. They really are. I mean, you know that team really well. You practice it for that team. You go into the draft, you know, trying to fix pieces of the puzzle to beat the teams in your division. But if Washington is playing this good and like he said, physical and comes at this Cowboys team, we might, the day after Christmas, we might be looking at the NFC East differently than we are right now. Do I think Washington gets two games against Cowboys? No, but if Dallas does stumble a bit and Washington stays this hot, we might be talking about them on December 26th and going, all right, where is this division actually going? Rather than a couple of weeks ago, you know, going to October where we thought, oh my God, the Cowboys are going to run away with this thing and have it wrapped up by the time we turn the calendar.
Yeah, I think what we need is just a completely healthy Cowboys team. It feels like each week somebody is injured.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody's injured. The COVID protocol for Mike McCarthy. I mean, that's, you know, nobody saw that one coming. But again, I mean, you know, there's that that's looming out there. It just seems like there's something in the news for the Cowboys other than just pure football happening to them each week.
Yeah, and
where you don't hear about it with other teams as much.
Right, exactly. And I think I do like the way Washington's playing, and Chase Young is hurt, and they're still playing the way they are.
Yeah,
but let's be honest. When Dallas is on, Dallas is by far the better team in that division.
They're probably one of the best. Would say the best team in the NFC.
Yeah,
when they got their two headed beast going. And I'm taking Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard. When they have those two running full speed, they're untouchable.
Right, right. And again, I get it. Look, they beat, you know, the Washington's beating the Buccaneers, a struggling Panthers team, and now the Seahawks, and a struggling Seahawks team, but it's still Russell Wilson with a beat up thumb and all. But come on, let's not get overly dramatic here about Washington.
Seahawks lost that game.
Yeah, of course.
Washington, I almost said the R word.
I know. Actually, Steve Levy actually did in the Monday night game. It's still going to take a while until they get a new name. I don't like calling them the football team. If I'm going to keep saying the Cowboys and the Giants and the Eagles, then I got to go Washington. And if I have to go football team, I just don't like going football team.
Do we have to just go city name now? Just like right. Dallas, New York?
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
So you can't, because we have two New Yorks. You can't do that.
Find a name and stay with it.
Yeah.
All right, it is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this is our Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage to fit your life? Rocket can. And again, thanks to Bobby Belt. We're going to talk to Scott Robillet of the Baton Rouge Advocate. He's going to join. You said to me, he got back to us because we want to talk about LSU and Brian Kelly. He's been covering LSU sports for 30 years.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's kind of a long time, I think.
Scott Robillet. So he goes back to like Robillet.
Robillet.
Oh, it's an A.
Yeah.
Robillet. Is that
all right? Not how I spelled it? R-A-B-A.
R-A-B-A-L-A-I-S.
A lot of A's.
Robillet. All right, that's pretty good. Is that French, right?
That's Cajun.
Cajun French?
Yep.
It's awesome.
I don't think he has that strong of an accent, but he'll probably say some things that
he doesn't talk like Ed Orgeron.
He probably spells with a lot of X's, I think.
Right, probably. That's right. Go Tigers. Talking some LSU. Can't wait. What's Ed Orgeron going to do without LSU, man?
Anything he wants.
It's true. Doesn't he go anywhere he wants?
Maybe does he take over at Notre Dame?
Oh, can you imagine if Notre Dame brought in Ed Orgeron? Oh, my God. LSU's like, we kind of got rid of him because he had a huge ego and he was causing problems. And you want to bring him to one of the most prestigious jobs in the sports world? Go ahead. Good luck.
You know, they're a Catholic school. We could change him.
We could change him. That's right. Oh, my goodness.
But that would be – I don't think that's ever happened, right? Coaches just swapping places.
I don't think that ever has.
Yeah, he might take a year off. Maybe he does some TV analyst, and then he finds another program.
I still think Notre Dame. I think Pete Carroll is going to be on the short list.
I do too. I was saying that yesterday around here. People were like, "No,
oh stop,
no,
you stop it." I'll back you 100%. That was actually what we talked about yesterday.
Yeah,
Pete Carroll. Listen, the leader in the clubhouse is Luke Fickell. I get it.
Right. Well, he's the hot coach right now.
If Urban Meyer is serious and he's not going to take the Notre Dame job, and that's a big if, I'd pick up the phone and call
Pete
Carroll.
Listen, here's the deal, right? If Mel, what's his name? Mel Tucker?
Yeah.
Mel Tucker or James Franklin, if they didn't sign deals, they would be the hot candidate.
Of course.
But they signed deals, so it's going to be Luke Fickell right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's hour number three coming up next as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. In the next hour, we will discuss the possible head coaches for Notre Dame as we continue.